What do you think of when you imagine God? It's past time to expand the ways we think about God through personal story, theology, spirituality, and social justice. We will explore feminine metaphors and untapped language for God. Some familiar, some less well-known, but all revelatory of a God who is more than we've been allowed to imagine. One thing is for sure, God is more.
I don't usually remember my dreams, but occasionally I'll have what I call stress dreams. I guess you could call them nightmares, but I don't really find them scary. They're mainly related to anxiety. In my dream, I'm in a worship service, and there's an introductory message video playing. I'm about to get up to start preaching, and I realize I forgot to prepare a message. I look out at all of you waiting to hear something about God and about the Bible, and I've done absolutely no work to prepare. I have nothing to say. Do you ever have any dreams like that? Whether you do or not may depend on how much you're like me, and that I love to be in control. I'm terrified of not being in control. I don't like being caught off guard. To be in control requires great preparation. And the thought of having neglected to prepare, well, for me, that's a stress dream. It's a nightmare. It's anxiety provoking. The more I have going on that I can't prepare for and stay on top of or in control, the more likely I am to have a stress dream. Now, to a certain extent, I hope you can all relate to what I'm talking about with preparation and control. None of us like to get surprised by being unprepared. If I reflect on this a bit though, this need for control, it likely has something to do with trying to avoid looking bad. And it's silly when I stop and think about it, because all I really need to do is just admit what happened, admit what was going on, and you'd be fine with it. While there's a part of my logical brain that knows everything will be all right, there's another part of me that lives in fear of being unprepared. Now, to live that out, to live with control, it requires enormous focus and preparation. Staying up to give a message without any preparation threatens my whole system of control. You see, in that moment, when I stand up without a message prepared in my dream, I'm suddenly vulnerable, and the weaknesses in me are being exposed. Now, I do show you all my weaknesses, but only when I want to show you my weaknesses. This sharing of weakness in my dreams is out of my control, so I avoid it. Now, this is my own experience with anxiety and control, and it's part of a much broader reality that we all experience. We all value control to some extent. Vulnerability doesn't build empires, control does. Tribal identities demand that we have distinctions between who is part of our community and who isn't. Politicians don't win elections by humanizing everyone and embracing complexity. They win based on their being right and the other person on the other side being wrong. And religious organizations don't gain dominance through generous orthodoxy. They do so through exclusionary statements of faith that define and demand right thinking. I'm gonna go with that last statement there, linger for a second. Staying in a space of uncertainty and of complexity and mystery is hard. Life is so much easier when things are neat and clean and clear. And so we cling to what feels certain and stable, and we all do this. Let's take a moment to discuss or ponder our desire for control. Here's our first question for discussion. What's your relationship with control? On a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you like it? And what led to that number? Let's talk about it. Our human desire for certainty and security and control are very real, with very real impact. Today we are continuing in our series God Is, based on the book of that name by Mallory Wyckoff. In this series, we've been looking at different metaphors for God to tackle the basic challenge that for most of us, our view of God is way too small. God is more than we can imagine. God's not just one thing, God is bigger. And we're heading right into the vastness of God today through exploring the mystery that is God. It's easy to get excited about the idea of embracing vulnerability and complexity. We love it when someone else does it. We cheer on characters who are real and authentic and multifaceted. And that sort of vulnerability and complexity, it rings true to us. And then ironically, we'll do what I do. And I spend even more time on preparing a message so I know I won't have to stand up with nothing to say. We love vulnerability and complexity when it's in someone else. For ourselves, we have controlling, limiting impulses in all of us that show up in our nightmares. Our subconscious seeks to make sense of all the ways that we feel unsafe in the world. Exerting control and securing power are hallmarks of our world's systems and structures. And this idea of control also shows up in our theologies, in the ways we understand, name, and talk about God. You see, our modern Western world is built on a system of rationalism and logic. We snuff out fanciful, pre-scientific, magical thinking. We're not comfortable with mystery. We don't like the unknown. And if it came down to it, and we could engage the world and God with total certainty, ensuring we were safe and that vulnerability and unknowns were eliminated, I'm guessing most of us would take that world. Let me repeat that. If we could engage the world and God with total certainty, ensuring that we were safe and that vulnerability and unknowns were eliminated, I'm guessing most of us would take that world. At first, I think I want that world, but in preparing this message, talking with Pastor Tom and Pastor Mikkel about this idea, I realized the complexity of it. Would I need to know everything about God and everything God knows to have total certainty? Is that even possible? And what about free will? Would we lose free will if I had to have assured safety and all unknowns were eliminated? It makes my head hurt thinking about that as much about uncertainty. And whatever I might want, a safe, certain world without vulnerability or unknowns is not the world that we've been given. And it's not the God that we've been given. God is mystery. There's a tension today between our desire for certainty and how that relates to control and the mystery of God. And we're not going to resolve that tension today. Because every time we think we get to fully know and understand and get God, God twirls around on us and takes another form or invites us to engage another aspect of God's self. And in those moments, I feel like the control I had over God through certainty is then it's lost. Maybe we all need to get better at embracing the mystery that is God. I'm preaching to myself again here today. We encounter God. We have a hard time putting it into language. Words fail us. We may have images or colors or feelings or sensations of God, but to express them in language is to lose the mystery. It's similar to how we can study the air and make truthful claims about the air. And when we try to wrap our experience in language, it can seem to dissipate. Air is hard to grasp. In this air-God connection, we seem to be Ryan, the air is meant to be inhaled. We take in God and we hold in the breath that is God. And maybe I just foreshadowed something there. If mystery is who God is, then we get better at embracing the mystery that is God. This is not only what draws us closer to God, but it's also important for us as human beings created in God's image. Fighting our human urges for control of God and each other is important. It's even essential for our flourishing. As Father Richard Rohr, an American priest and writer, is quoted, "All saying must be balanced by unsaying, and knowing must be humbled by unknowing. Without this balance, religion invariably becomes arrogant, exclusionary, and even violent." Without this balance of knowing and unknowing, religion becomes warped and bent, and so do we, those who practice faith. At my worst, my desire for certainty and control leads to me being arrogant and exclusionary and closed-minded and obstinate in all the worst things within me. On the other hand, when I know what I don't know, when I embrace my unknowing, well, that's me at my humble best. I'm open, I'm curious, I'm compassionate, and well, I'm creative. Sorry, I got on a roll there. Let's explore together the God of mystery so that we might better know the God of the universe and might become better followers of God. Now, to do that, I'm going to take us to the Old Testament of the Bible. The Old Testament records a famous encounter in the book of Exodus between Moses and God. Moses is an Israelite, a follower of the one true God. And Moses was frustrated by seeing his people enslaved by the Egyptians. That frustration boiled over into murder and led Moses to flee from Egypt and the life he knew. Moses had tried to control the outcomes himself, and it didn't turn out well. In fact, it led to him murdering someone and fleeing as a fugitive. So he's a man on the run, and he finds himself in the middle of the desert herding sheep. Now, while he's in the desert as a shepherd, he's paying attention to his surroundings while he's outside, and suddenly something catches his eye, a bush that was aflame with fire but wasn't consumed by it. Now approaching that bush, Moses heard a voice telling him to remove his sandals, for the ground on which he stood was holy. He removed his sandals. He didn't understand what was going on, but he understood enough to obey what he heard. And the voice told Moses that he would emerge as the leader of the people of Israel, guiding them out of slavery and oppression in Egypt and leading them to wide open spaces where they would flourish. Now, in this moment, Moses is clearly not in control here, and he wants some way of grasping this mysterious, unimaginable experience, especially as he imagines trying to tell his story to other people. So Moses asked for a name. Who should I say sent me? What a great question. Now, in this moment, it could be that Moses is just leaning into his curiosity. He has a sense of wonder about the God that is being revealed to him. He's in touch with his unknowing. It could also be that Moses hates this lack of control and certainty, and he's grasping for something to hang on to, for a name. He's seeking some certainty from God. Now, whatever leads to that question, we know Moses is not in control at all, but he's engaged. He knows there's more going on in this moment than he can understand or make sense of, and so he presses in to the moment, and God responds to Moses' engagement. The name Moses is given by God doesn't clear everything up. The name God gives is as mysterious as the encounter itself. God says, I am who I am. God says, I am who I am. I will be what I will be. I will be who I will be. I will be who I am. I am who I will be. Huh? If you're confused right now, imagine how Moses felt in that moment. For the burning bush. He basically just asked God who God is, and that's the answer? Huh? I am who I am? Now, scholars and translators love to wrestle with this passage from Exodus. It's a great one to try to figure out. And the answer that Moses received is not an end. It's not clarity. It's not certainty. It's not a wrapping up of loose pieces. It's not control, or it's not the clarity that Moses wanted. It's not the conclusion of the conversation. The name God gives to Moses opens the door to greater mystery with an invitation to explore it. God is mystery. It's right there in God's name given to Moses from a burning bush. Now, let's pause a moment to reflect on the name of God given to Moses. Let's accept God's invitation to explore this God whose name is I Am Who I Am. Here's our next question for discussion. Take a moment to wrestle with the name of God. What does I am who I am mean to you? Let's talk about that. Modern translations take the name of God as Yahweh. Now, for many Jews, that name Yahweh is considered to be unspeakable and unwritable. It's as if to claim that one can speak of God with any certainty or control is to take God's name in vain, which is something that God clearly tells us not to do. Don't do it. It's not a good idea. Abort, abort. Now, some people have suggested that this name of God was not ever intended to be said or written, but it was meant to be breathed. I'm not sure how you can breathe a word without saying it, but I do guess this idea of breathing God's name kind of makes sense if I explain it a little bit. So let me explain. There are four Hebrew consonants that make up the name Yahweh. And this word Yahweh means to be. Now, if I say those letters in English, Y-H-W-H, it doesn't do much for us. But in Hebrew, this word sounds something like Yad, He, Vav. Hey. Now maybe that's doing something. Will you say that with me? Yad, hey, vav, hey. Yad, hey, vav, hey. Yad, hey, vav, hey. Maybe that does sound a little bit like breathing. It could be breathing in, breathing out. The letters mimic the sound of our inhaling, the yad and the vav, and exhaling, hey, the most basic and essential practice for us to have life, breathing. God's name is the very breath on our lips. God's name is revealed to Moses, and God's name is as mysterious as the encounter Moses has with this God who is mystery. Now, let me remind you, Moses has this encounter with God in the middle of nowhere. It's near a mountain whose name literally means wasteland. Now, the encounter happens in the middle of nowhere, away from any religious structures. There are no buildings, there's no signs, there's no temples, there's no altars, there's nothing to indicate that this place is holy. And yet, God tells Moses that he's on holy ground. From the words of God to the setting, the whole experience of God for Moses is wrapped in mystery. Mallory Wyckoff notes about this mystery. Sometimes I wonder what would have happened if instead the bush burned in the middle of the city, or near a temple, or inside a church, where it could be observed by political or legal scholars or religious teachers. I wonder how quickly they may have set out to downplay what happened, to contain the potential ramifications, to explain it in three easy sermon points, to demystify it. I wonder how quickly I would have moved to do the same. I don't know about you, but I can relate to Mallory Wyckoff's wanderings. I want certainty. I want control. And I have this bent toward a desire to demystify the mysteries of God. I have a desire to demystify the mysteries of life. That's why I became a scientist. Now, several years ago, I noticed a sharp pain in my abdomen, and I did what most guys do. I ignored it. And the pain got worse until one night I had trouble sleeping, and that's super unusual for me to not sleep well. So my wife, Jana, she said to me, maybe, Mark, you should go get that checked out. I went to urgent care, and I was immediately sent to the emergency room for suspected appendicitis. A few tests later at the emergency room, and I was being prepared for an emergency appendectomy. Thank you, Jana, for encouraging me to get that checked out. That was a good idea. When I was preparing for surgery, I had this desire to talk with the doctors and with the nurses and the technicians so that I would know that they knew what they were doing. I went from managing pain to the uncertainty of a surgery in a matter of hours. And again, I want certainty. I want control. I want to know that the surgeon has practiced for so many years and has done this surgery successfully every single time. I want to know that the nurses are checking off every task and monitoring me carefully every step of the way. I want to know that I'll be okay and that the surgery will be successful. I have a desire to demystify the mysteries of life. But at the end of the day, with every advance in medicine at our disposal, and even with the collective decades of experience in the room preparing for my surgery, there are no guarantees. Surgery is inherently risky, and yet this is what we do. We seek certainty. We seek knowing. We want to control and contain, and we seek answers even when we know that there are none. That's one of my stories of uncertainty in facing an emergency surgery. I'm sure you've had this as well with a new job or a move to a new area or a new relationship or your own health issue. Let's take a moment to talk about uncertainty. When was a time when you faced uncertainty and how did you respond? Let's discuss that. We all want to know what is going to happen. When we are hurting, when we are tired, when we are waist deep in the uncertainty of life, the last thing we need at that moment is the reminder that God is mystery. That doesn't give us hope. That doesn't give us comfort, even if it's true. What we need in those moments of uncertainty is to breathe. What we need in those moments of mystery in life is to be reminded as we breathe in and breathe out that God's name is the very breath on our lips. That God is near. That God who is mystery is holding us in the mystery of life. In the midst of learning to know a God who is by very nature so far beyond us that we can only shake our heads in wonder, we have a foundational truth that we can cling to. Our foundation is God's love for us as God's beloved children. With each breath, God is near. God is holding us. God's name is the very breath on our lips. For the past year or two, my wife, Jana, has been working with her doctors to address the sudden onset of asthma. We're not sure what caused Jana's asthma, but especially on our long hikes, Jana has experienced tightness in her lungs and difficulty breathing. Now, whatever health issues I've faced myself, it's maybe even more challenging to navigate a health issue when it's someone you care about, and the health impacts are on something as important and essential for life as breathing. I've been praying for Jana's lungs and for the doctors and medication and her body to work together to allow her lungs to open and to expand, to let every bit of oxygen into her body and to make her whole. I've been reminded through the loss of control of Jana's breathing just how important the breath in our lungs is for life. Her lungs need to be open and to expand for her to have full health. Now, opening and expanding is essential for healthy breathing. And in a world where we can't control everything or know everything with certainty, is the nearness of God that allows us to open and expand. I hope and pray that our view of God, our understanding of God, our appreciation for the mystery of God would allow us to open and expand our relationship with God. Opening and expanding, having the breath or the name of God on our lips, brings me back to this quote from Father Richard Rohr. All saying must be balanced by unsaying. All knowing must be humbled by unknowing. And without this balance, religion invariably becomes arrogant, exclusionary, and even violent. There's a bent within us that's not the created intent toward arrogance and exclusion and even violence toward one another. There are forces all around us, within us and outside us, that compel us toward certainty. And those forces tell us that everything can and should be conquered, tamed, defined, controlled, predicted, and planned for. I feel those forces, and I'm confident that you do too. I feel them in my body. I feel them in my mind. I feel the anxiety within me that they create. I feel the possibilities that they limit. So I want to remind us all today that we can also feel breath, that we can pause. We can turn our attention to what already has and always will be taking place within and around us. God is near, as close as our next breath. And God is more than we can ever imagine. God is mystery. And while knowing that mystery, we can inhale, noticing the familiarity and ease of that rhythm. And we can exhale, knowing that breath can be held but ultimately never contained. We can take in the God who is as close as the air in our lungs and as deeply and wonderfully mysterious as the human experience, saying God's name each time we breathe. May we leave today opening and expanding in the security of the love of God. Life is not in our control. Life is mysterious. God is mysterious. And God is near. As near as the breath on our lips. Yad hey, vav hey. Yad hey, vav hey. Yad hey, vav hey. Amen.